In what may have been the biggest leak in the CIA's history, someone disclosed thousands of pages of information about the software tools the agency uses to spy on foreign adversaries. And, of course, it ended up on WikiLeaks. Now, in some ways, it resembles the Edward Snowden case of the National Security Agency, since the leak ostensibly came from a single person who had access to a lot of information about many different classified systems. Gary Schmidt is the director of the Marilyn Ware Center for Security Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. He spoke with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu about how a leak of this magnitude is still possible in the post-Snowden era.
I think there's a kind of double-edged sword here, one of which is the information systems, you know, allow you to share information in a way that you never were able to do before. And post 9/11, there was a big emphasis made on actually using all this data processing to share information. So they went sort of pigeonhole information that needed to be put together with other things. So there's that dynamic. But at the same time, of course, having all this information available, of course, allows for somebody who wants to do something untoward to grab a whole lot more information than they perhaps could have in the past. Post-Snowden, there was supposed to be a lot of tightening up, but I just think it's inherently very difficult with the technology we're dealing with these days.
I take your point about the trade-offs, and yeah, for sure, we definitely wanted to do a better job of information sharing after 9/11, but you know, it strikes me that there's a difference between the ability to share raw intelligence versus, you know, information getting out about core intelligence capabilities, if that distinction makes sense. It seems like we ought to be able to share one while protecting the other.
Yeah, I agree. But one of the conundrums that the intelligence community faces with all the contractors it has is, if you think about it, people who are contractors are in the business of obviously trying to make a reasonable profit. And so that means keeping costs down. And one of the most expensive things you can do is provide for extra security. So I think a lot of contractors obviously are quite shaken by what's happened with Snowden and some of the other cases recently. On the other hand, it's still expensive to sort of double down on security and protect that information, because, you know, that's at the end of the day, those are profits that they're not going to make.
In your op-ed for The Hill a couple weeks ago, you point out that leaks of critical intel capabilities are just about as old as the U.S. intelligence community itself. What, if anything, is different about this particular flavor of leaks compared to, you know, the old days?
Well, I think a couple things. The first one is that, again, as you say, this is not something new in terms of the methodologies and the technical collection systems being lost through espionage or leaks. I think the one thing that has to be taken account of is the fact that we just have a lot more contractors, a lot more people dealing with technology. I mean, on the contractor level alone, we're talking about 40,000 for the intelligence community, and that's something quite new, so that's a pretty big problem. I also think, you know, when you're walking through this, I think there's also a generational issue, which is a lot of people who work in the high-tech internet area, the cyber area, are folks whose instincts aren't perhaps as strong about sort of protecting national security or national interest as perhaps a generation or two before. I'm not trying to say that, you know, this is a huge generational problem, because I think 99.9% of the contractors are obviously very dependable and loyal. But it has to be admitted that there's a kind of generational change about how people think about national interests versus the freedom of the internet and privacy in general.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And to that point, you know, is it worth talking about the motivations of the leakers? Because one of the differences between Snowden and whoever's behind this leak, and let's say an Aldrich Ames, is, you know, those kind of traditional mole types of folks were literally turning over, you know, the most valuable intel capabilities to a foreign adversary in exchange for money. Whereas these leaks, you know, you can disagree with the motivations behind them, but presumably the motivations are that this is something we think is being done improperly and the world needs to know about these capabilities because we don't think the U.S. should necessarily have them, which is different from, you know, just putting everything out there with no motivation except for financial gain.
Yeah, I mean, we've always had ideological espionage. I mean, you know, during the Cold War, and even in my generation, there were people from that were, you know, anti, let's say, the Vietnam War, who you know, doubted the U.S. foreign policy and thought they could make a change or make a difference by, you know, providing others, you know, valuable secrets. But again, I do think it's worth looking at sort of how somebody like a Snowden and apparently a couple other cases most recently have come about, that there's kind of a sense of really, and I don't want to, again, have to be careful not to blame the whole generation, but there is a sense of, you know, are you a citizen of the world or are you a citizen of the United States? And I think there's this absolutely small percentage of the current generation that perhaps has a slightly different view or a different view than many of us.
Yeah. And I guess another difference in sort of the new generation of leaks is that the intel winds up on a public website for all the world to see, instead of in the hands of just one adversarial intelligence service where you may or may not even know that they have it. I wonder if you think that's more or less damaging one way or the other.
I think it's probably, well, it depends on what the actual methodology or tool that's been lost is. But in fact, you know, if you don't know that you've lost something, that can be more damaging than if you know you've lost something and you can take steps to try to ameliorate that problem. But both are, you know, we put millions and millions of dollars in time and effort into these programs. And sadly, they can be gone in literally just the nanosecond it takes to download.
In your view, what are the questions that Congress and other policymakers ought to be asking after this latest leak? Is it anything new? Is it anything different than what we went through after Snowden, after all the self-reflection that happened back then?
Well, the question I have, I suppose, is how much effort actually after Snowden was actually put into making sure that these increased security measures have actually been carried out across not only within the intelligence community, but also in the contractor world. This is, you know, the use of a large number of contractors was kind of a rational, you know, attempt to deal with the surge of intelligence needs after 9/11. And then they've been continued because there's a lot of unique experience expertise you don't want to lose when people, you know, can go off and get higher paying jobs. So this has become a much larger problem than perhaps before 2001. And it's only been in recent years that I think Congress is actually taking the issue of the management of this large group of people that actually don't work inside the government aboard. And so there's been increasing efforts to try to get reporting on just how large this is a problem, and also what kind of management tools need to be put in place to be both good managers, but also double down on security. I think it's very hard for Congress to do this for one particular reason, which is it's not clear to me that the intelligence community itself has a very good handle on these issues.
Well, as you point out, this was part of a post 9/11 surge, but a lot of these things have turned out to be enduring requirements that have just continued to be performed by contractors. So does it make sense to bring at least some of this back into the government, where agencies would at least have a little bit more, you know, it's within their span of control and they have greater oversight?
I do think it'd be useful to begin to try to bring people in from the contractor world into the permanent government. But, I mean, we also ought to recognize that one of the reasons that hasn't happened is because the cost of hiring somebody, you know, for a more permanent job, all the insurance that you pay, all the, you know, the retirement benefits that you begin to add up. So, you know, if we're going to do that, which I think actually is the right thing to do, we ought to realize that it's actually going to be more expensive, and that that's the price we probably should be paying for increased management and also security.
That's Gary Schmidt, the director of the Maryland Ware Center for Security Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. We'll post a link to his op-ed on the CIA leaks at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.